It's got a death curse.
Don't bother me, be like me. And then who will help you up in the sewer?
Just like having a wart removed.
What's the boogeyman?
As a matter of fact, it was.
Here we go again.
30 shows in 2.5 years. Jesus, Lord God. It doesn't seem like that much, does it? You know what? When we started this gig, we were like, if just one of you listens to this show, and because you listened to this show, you found a movie that you otherwise wouldn't have found, and it scared the fuck out of you, then our job would have been done. And over the last couple of years, we've heard from more than a few of you, and I can tell you that the mission has been accomplished, and we've had a fucking great time making these shows for you. And that's what this 30th episode of Horror 101 is all about. Let's focus on you. What's that one movie that's just scared the hell out of you?
Oh, you bastards! Why are you torturing me like this? Why?
Fear is an excellent common denominator. Everyone's afraid of something at some point in their lives. What's that one scene in that one movie that just fucked you right up? The one that kept you up at night? The one where you'll never really forget the infection of dread it stuck you with, and it took time to shake, didn't it? Everyone has one. And it might not even have been a horror movie that did it, but there was something, and we want yours. Bring them to us. On this 30th episode of Horror 101, we've invited you to help educate those fears. Let's get to the show.
You scared, motherfucker? Well, you should be.
Gentlemen, holy Christ, it seems like forever since we fucking podcast. When was the last time? When did we record the Amityville show? It's like October or something like that.
Yep, that was the last show we did, the Amityville.
The Amityville 2, that was 29th.
That was November.
And now we have the nefarious Paul B. back. So we're doing this show, basically, and I'm hoping to get some good stories from the people that we call. Basically, this show is more for the listeners to get involved, where you share, we always say that it's Horror 101, educating your fears. Now they get a chance to educate other people's fears on what movies fucked them up when they were growing up. And like I said, it might not even be a horror movie. It might have been something they saw last week. But most of the, oh my God, things I remember was from I was a kid, right? Things that probably we shouldn't have seen.
Well, I mean, we probably all had a memory of a time in which we saw something and we knew that our lives would never be the same. Something that we knew was doing psychological damage to us on some level and we just didn't stop watching. We probably should have looked away, but damage was done. We saw something, there was no going back, and we all had that feeling like, oh crap, I just broke something in my brain.
Marion, don't look at it. Shut your eyes, Marion, don't look at it, no matter what happens.
That's a powerful movie when you're a kid. Yeah. That was my first scare. Raiders of the Lost Ark just fucked me up when I was 5. Because I was coming around the corner, and the first thing I see, it was like perfectly timed. Come around the corner, and Tote's face melted right off. His eyes rolled into the back of his head, and I just went, what the fuck just happened? I had no clue what I was watching. I'm like, what are you people watching? It scared the fuck out of me. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. I watched Raiders of the Lost Ark at least 50, 60 times between the time I was 6 and 10, and every one of those times, up until I was about 9.5, bordering on 10, every time the ark opened up and the thing started flying around, I would get up off my fucking ass, I would leave the room, I would go into the next room, and I would listen to the ark destroy them.
because I knew that's when the fucking guy's face melted off. I knew it. And then when I was about 9 and a half, I watched it again, and I willed myself to sit in front of that television, and I'm like, this time, kid, you're fucking sitting right there, and you're gonna watch this once and for all. And I did, and it was terrifying, but now that I'd seen everything, it was like taking the last piece of the puzzle. All this time, you're putting this big puzzle together, and there's one piece missing. You're like, what the fuck? And you let it sit there, and you're looking at it, and that piece is gone, and you're like, fuck. And sure enough, 3 months later, you move a piece of furniture, and there's the fucking piece right there. You pick it up, and you're like, fucking A, and you slam it down, and finally it's all there. That's what it was like for me watching that scene.
Between Raiders and RoboCop, those were the two movies at a young age I knew watching it that it wasn't going to go away easily. That it was burning itself into my brain watching it. And I knew as soon as I walked away, it'd still be there for a while. And I thought, oh no, this is permanent. This what I'm watching right now will linger.
Okay! Now I gotcha!
And I'll tell you, that RoboCop scene where the guy gets doused in the toxic waste, that haunted me for a long damn time. Because that had to be one of the most horrific, horrible deaths I've ever seen. That poor bastard knew what was happening to him, and there was no going back. He was fucked.
Paul Verhoeven.
Yep.
He was ahead of his time when it came to violence and action. Oh, absolutely. Mainstream action movies, he pushed the envelope. He wanted gore.
Yeah.
God bless him.
See, I got this problem. Cops don't like me, so I don't like cops.
And when Boniger is first shooting up Murphy, and he's like, and he starts blowing the limbs off, that freaked me the fuck. I'd never seen violence on that scale before.
Give the man a hand!
Julia, there's a man out there. I don't mean a man, I mean a... I don't know what I mean.
Terror 20,000 Feet.
The original with William Shatner?
The original William Shatner, it looks terrible. It's obviously just a man in a fucked up bear suit.
Yeah.
But the way that episode, and they remade it for the movie, and the movie's nowhere near as good, and the performance isn't as good, and nothing as John Lithgow is a good actor, he was nowhere near as good as William Shatner was.
Julia, don't look at me like that.
Bob.
I am not imagining it. I'm not imagining it. He's out there. Don't look. He's not there now.
The way it's built up, you know, you can see, you can kind of see something on the wing, not really, this rain, and, you know, yada, yada, yada. And then when Shatner just opens that blind...
And it's there.
And it's there staring at him. That, just now talking about it, I can feel like the hair going in the back of my head.
And Twilight Zone was 50s television. Yeah. You know, yeah. That was 50s television. Some of
But it was groundbreaking.
It was.
And envelope pushing, you know.
We need another Rod Serling.
And he was such a prolific writer, too. A lot of people don't realize that most shows today, the head writer only writes maybe a fraction of the actual episodes. He wrote 80% of the original Twilight Zone series.
Oh, yeah.
80%.
Yeah, and Night Gallery was the same way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Please welcome our first guest to the Horror 101 show. It's Eric Hofer.
Hello?
Hey, Eric, this is Cash Wampa from Horror 101. How are you, sir?
I am all right. How are you doing?
You had a movie that scared the hell out of you. Which one was it?
It was It. The movie It. Stephen King's It.
That was like 1992,
93? Yeah, somewhere around there. Early 90s, I believe.
Now, was it just Pennywise that fucked you up? Because the nefarious Paul B. over here has this big fear of clowns.
I hate clowns.
Tell him what he said.
I'll kill you all. I'll drive you crazy, and I'll kill you all.
Fuck clowns.
Fuck clowns. Sorry. Fuck everything about clowns, and one of the reasons is jointly because of Poltergeist and It.
I've yet to see Poltergeist. I'm ashamed.
Yes, you should be.
I'm very ashamed of that one.
Yeah, you gotta educate your fears on that one. So, what was it about It that tipped you over the edge?
It was actually how it all went down. Me and my friend Ryan, we probably rented it on VHS back then, and we just watched it, and just the way, his menacing look, and the way he was talking, and just how he. We all float, and you'll float too. Okay.
They all float down
here.
They
all float down here, and you'll float too.
Oh, yes. They float, Georgie. They float. And when you're down here with me, you float down!
That's going to throw you seeing a clown in a sewer, eh? You don't usually see that every day.
We were just discussing that. I'm like, I don't care how old I am or how much I want my paper boat back. If it falls down a sewer and some clown is inviting me down to come get it, I'm gonna say fuck you.
Exactly. I'm scared of freaking drain pipes too, because of that movie. I'm like, I'm not going anywhere near no drain pipe or anything like that. Scared of clowns ever since. I can't even look at the box art for that movie at all.
You and I both, my friend.
My wife, she'll be like, hey. Look at this movie, and then show it. I'm like, oh, what the fuck?
I'm every nightmare you ever had. I am your worst dream come true. I'm everything you ever were afraid of.
Well, Eric, we want to thank you very much for accepting this call and being part of the show. And you'll probably hear this. It'll probably be out sometime in February. Sometime. Because I got to take a couple weeks off. I'm going to the Dominican. So it'll be a little bit before we get it out. But thank you very much for allowing us to call you and for sharing your stories with us.
Oh, no problem. Thank you for having probably one of the best horror podcasts I've ever heard. I've listened to episode one. And hopefully you guys continue rolling it out. You guys do a real good thing.
Thank you very much, Eric. Have a good evening, all right?
You have a good night.
Take care.
You have a good night, too.
All right, bye-bye.
Thanks.
Bye.
Nice kind words, eh? A movie that I wanted to mention that fucked me up when I was a kid, and I caught it on, like, the Sunday night movie. I must have been, like, 7 or 8, and I was allowed to watch it. It was one of those Sunday night movies, was Poltergeist.
Yeah,
and I remember.
I was
like,
going to say Poltergeist.
Poltergeist. I remember vividly when the kid's in bed and he's
the clown.
No. I understand the clown.
The tree
for you.
Got me.
The when he's talking, it taps into your fear of when you were a kid of bad lightning storms at night. There was something about bad lightning storms, yeah. Whether it was the flash.
Oh,
or
is
the
that when
boom.
He comes in and he starts talking to him about how the time difference between the lightning strike and the thunder?
You know, I think the storm's going to pass us.
How do you know?
Because I can count. You know what you do? When you see the lightning, you count until you hear the thunder. If you can count higher each time, that means the storm's moving away from us.
And you know what? I really liked the Freeling family,
mm-hmm.
because you got time to invest. You know, the little girl is cute. The little boy acts like a little
it's
boy.
It's Craig T. Nelson, who's
you,
like the
you got Craig T.
Dad.
Nelson. You got the daughter who Joe flips Beckley. Off. You know, she's a teenage girl, but she's flipping off the construction workers. She's a sassy little minx. And Jo Beth Williams was the fucking minx herself. You know, if you go back and watch that, she was fucking hot. You really like this family. And a scene like that where the dad's taking his time to say, listen, you know, it's just a storm, no problem. The tree's bothering you. Well, the tree's very old. It's been there for a long time. It's there to protect us. That was like a really good scene where you family.
You need those scenes to establish the family. It's like that moment in Jaws when Roy Scheider's looking at his son and they have that pantomime where the son is mimicking everything the father does. And then he says, give us a kiss.
Give us a kiss, yeah.
1,000, 2,000, 3,000, 4,000, 1,000.
You get to that scene where he's counting down, and the amount of time after the flash is going down and not up, and he's recognized the kid's getting scared because the storm is coming. Yeah. It ain't going. And then as he's counting, sure enough, that tree reaches in, grabs him, pulls him through the window, and starts eating. That was it for me.
It's Mommy! 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 There's an army!
priest starts eating the kid, and again, the kid's like, it hurts, I'm like, oh my god, yeah. What the fuck is going on here? I'm 7 years old watching this, and all at the same time, the little girl's got some shit going on, and the evil's pulling everything into the closet, she's hanging on for dear life, screaming for mommy, and everybody's in the backyard trying to save this kid. It was a diversion that was beautifully done.
Our next guest has been a long-time listener, and dare I say, one of the biggest fans of Horror 101. He's constantly messaging us about how we've helped educate his fears over the last few years. Please welcome Mr. Eugene Trepanier.
Somebody, I swear to Christ, I'm gonna kick that fucking, I swear.
Silence! Ah, watch the microphone.
What's up?
Eugene!
Yes?
What's going on?
I'm waiting for you guys to call me.
And how was your city council meeting? Are you like big wig?
Oh my god, it was crap.
You are on with the world famous Brian Stewart, the most nefarious Paul B, and we got my lovely wife, the nude, sitting in the corner here with her phone in her hand.
Hi, Eugene.
Howdy.
We were talking about scenes in movies that just fucked us up when we were a kid, and you suggested that you got one, American Werewolf in London. That screwed you up growing up. Is that correct?
Oh, did it ever.
What about it really screwed you up?
Well, it's after David Naughton gets it on with the Jenny Elgutter, his nurse, and they go and do their thing. He falls asleep, and then he wakes up, and he's suddenly at home. And they're watching the Muppet Show, and he's with his family. And then Nazi monsters break in and start shooting up the place.
All right, already.
That scene, I remember that scene screwing me up because it was just complete chaos, and it was brutal. These things coming in,
totally.
You don't know what they are, and they've got Uzis, they've got automatic weapon, they're cutting down his family, the one's got a knife to his throat, making him watch them do all this shit, and then once all the mayhem is done, they fucking slice his throat, and it's a gusher too, and that's it.
Yeah. And it's also really throws you off because you know you're watching a werewolf movie, and this happens. So, he wakes up, and you realize, oh my god, it's just a nightmare, okay. I've dealt with that before. I've seen movies with nightmare sequences. It's fine. But now he's in a hospital bed, and the Nazis come in again and do it again.
Holy shit.
Messed me up. I can handle one nightmare in a movie, but I've never seen him do it twice. Just screwed me right up.
You saw me standing alone.
Jesus Christ!
Plus the werewolf transformation scene in there is pretty intense.
That was Rick Baker. Yeah. And you know, American Werewolf in London was a project that John Landis had in his mind for a good decade, and finally he had the opportunity to make it. And I think that's why it's such a great, solid, entertaining movie. He said, let's take this transformation, put it in a living room, flood it with light, and just watch people, you know, make people go through this, and they hit it out of the park.
And I would actually say that it's never been topped.
No, because now everything's CGI, but you know, you watch like Underworld or something, and it goes from man to beast in a split second, and it's all just CGI. It's somebody sitting behind it like... This was something that they took a week and a half to 2 weeks to film, this 3 minutes of this guy transforming from a human being into a werewolf. And we bought it. I mean, right down to listening to the follicles, the hair coming out of the follicles. You can hear them growing.
The bones crunch.
And the fact he's screaming in pain the whole time, too.
Yeah, I mean, this was not a pretty transformation. This was filled with pain. Eugene, thank you very much for joining us. I'm glad you enjoy the show. We look forward to making more.
Thanks for having me on.
Oh, no, it was our pleasure. Thanks for taking our call. We wish you a good night, and we'll talk to you soon, sir.
Hey. Thanks, guys.
Take care.
Thank you.
Bye.
Cheers.
Bye. Bye, Nude.
See ya.
How you doing?
Any chance we get to discuss great horror with people is time well spent. Some of our listeners weren't available for a call, but we did get some written entries, like this one from Dave Girard.
All right. Our friend David Girard wrote in to us. He's like, how my fears are educated. I like how he put that. I'd grown up going to horror films at my local drive-in, watching the Nature Gone Crazy flicks of the 70s, Grizzly, The Pack, Prophecy, and lots of other classic cheesy titles. I knew horror and what to expect when going into a horror film, or at least that's what I thought. My older brother stuck me into a theater to see Funhouse, which was Tobe Hooper. Mm-hmm. We both really enjoyed it. We're ready for more slasher fun. Within a couple weeks, another horror flick was hitting our local movie house, Friday the 13th Part 2. Another slasher movie. At the age of 10, I figured I could handle it. It had made it. I had made it through stuff like Kingdom of the Spiders, which was like still one of the best fucking spider movies with William Shatner.
Yeah, William Shatner.
Yeah. And Legend of Boggy Creek, I could handle Friday the 13th Part 2. So, and this is how we can tell he's American. We get some random older lady to buy us tickets. My brother was 15 at the time, posing as our aunt, and with a bag of popcorn in hand, we are in the middle of a packed house on opening night. As the movie played out, you could feel the tension and fear grip the whole audience. That group feeling of uneasiness you don't get very often in the theater anymore, as Jason diced his way through the counselors and echoed off the walls with Manfredini's score, the blood, the boobs, the blades, it was too much. I held it together and laughed off the movie scares with my older brother as the lights came up and we made our way home. Now later that evening, as I'm watching TV and dozing on the couch, my older brother sneaks up as I'm drifting off and whispers in my ear. Boom, I'm up screaming, wide awake and heart pounding. My parents come in and yell at my brother for teasing me and tells us it's time for bed. I lay awake in the dark room just knowing that Jason's in there with me. Fear brought on by Friday the 13th Part 2 stayed with me for weeks and in some ways still lingers to this day. Looking back, I realized that while I was terrified watching that movie, it also gave birth, it also gave birth to my love of horror. To this day, when I push play on a horror movie, I'm hoping to tap into that same feeling I had when I watched Friday the 13th Part 2 so long ago. That's a fucking great story, David. Thank you very much. And it's funny you mention that because I know for a fact that Friday the 13th Part 2, I don't know what it is about that movie, has fucked up a lot of people I knew growing up.
I know what it is.
Which one?
I know what it is. Well, for me, that fucks me up with that film.
I'll tell you this. I know my buddy Elvis, who we were like gore fans for the longest time together. We were like gore fans, you know, blood brothers back about 15 years ago. He always told the story of how when he was a kid, he watched Friday the 13th Part 2. And the scene where the poor fucker in the wheelchair gets the machete in the face.
Yeah.
And he watches the guy going down the stairs.
All the way back down.
Backwards. With the lightning flashing and the rain on in the wheelchair down the stairs with this machete sticking out of his face, he's like, I couldn't handle that. That fucked him up for weeks.
You know what fucks me up about part two?
What? Spoiler alert!
Is the fact, and I can't remember her name, but the main character from part one, you think that she, like, you know, there's numerous times in part one where you think that's it, she's bought it, she's done. She survives. And then she's off in the first 20 minutes of part
two. She sees the head in the fridge.
Yeah.
No, she's off. She's killed in the first 20 minutes of part. And you think, because it takes place pretty much immediately after part one is finished,
a few weeks later,
she's home. She's, you know, she's obviously still going through issues because she's talking on the phone with her mom and I'm okay and all, you know, all the rest of it. She sees the head in the fridge and then that's it. That's what fucked me up.
She gets a screwdriver in the temple. That's it. Yeah,
and she's so vulnerable. She's in the shower at one point.
Yeah,
she's so vulnerable. And you think, okay, she's made it through the fucking nightmare of part one. She decapitated Mrs. Voorhees. Little Jason pops out of the water at the end. Is that real? Is it a dream? You never know. Blah 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 blah. She survives, and then that's it. What fucked me up.
The scene that still gets me is the one where she first enters Jason's cabin.
The lair.
And that when you see the window in the background and you see Jason running full tilt towards the cabin, but she hasn't looked out the window yet. So we're fully aware that he is coming and coming fast, and she's still tentatively kind of creeping into this place, and we're like, look out the window! Move!
Talking about Amy Steele?
Yeah. That scene, it was probably the best scene in the movie for me. It was so well framed, so well set up, and it's just the energy of that moment when you see him running in the background towards the cabin, and she has no idea. I mean, it's just, it's genius.
Our next guest has been a buddy of mine since we were 5 years old. I can't tell you how many great horror flicks we both experienced together growing up. I remember watching Night of the Demons at his place for the first time, and I was always borrowing his Fangoria and Gorezone magazines. Please welcome my good friend, Mr. Derek Cookson.
Good evening.
Hey, what's up, Cookie?
What can I do you gentlemen for?
Well, you had suggested, I had asked you if there was a movie that had scared the hell out of you when you were growing up, and you really surprised me, and I've known you since we were 5 years old, that Halloween, of all movies, scared the hell out of you. How did that happen?
Well, I mean, there was really two, and I tossed this around, the first one being Children Shouldn't Play with Dead Things.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't have enough of a memory of it now. I just remember the final scene of the zombies on the island trapping the woman in the attic of the house. That's the last place she could go to, and she just had a hammer. And that was the last, and they kept breaking in no matter what they did. And that's my only real memory, and that single memory haunted me, but I just didn't have enough of a memory to be able to talk eloquently about the movie. So I chose the other go-to, which was the ultimate boogeyman of them all, to me, is Michael Myers from Halloween.
Let me stop you right there, only because we haven't done a show on Children Shouldn't Play Dead Things, but for a 1972 movie, that was very, very powerful. That was a Bob Clark movie, the same guy that went ahead to do A Christmas Story did that movie.
And Black Christmas.
And Black Christmas.
And Porky's.
And it was, my experience with it was, as a kid, probably doing what many of us shouldn't have been doing, was watching the Saturday afternoon thriller double feature.
On WXLN TV 20.
Yeah, and it was on there, and back when, you know, they would play stuff like that on regular public TV, and I probably shouldn't have been watching it for my age, but I know that I was fascinated. I loved that the ending of that movie had the zombies on the raft. They won. They were on the boat or something going towards the mainland.
And, that's right.
And that was a seminal movie in my young horror movie watching career.
So what about Halloween then? Why was it that one that screwed you up?
Well, just, you know, that one has just always stuck with me as the ultimate boogeyman. You know, he not only did Michael Myers like killing the people, but he also liked spooking them out. You know, he liked to have them see him for a minute and then he'd disappear. You know, and for the rest of your life, you're out on a, in the fall, anywhere near Halloween, you hear leaves rattling, you turn around, you half expect to see a guy behind a bush somewhere, and then he steps away. You know, it's like, that, to most people, I think, was the ultimate movie that would give you the creeps forever.
I watched him for 15 years, sitting in a room, staring at a wall, not seeing the wall, looking past the wall, looking at this night, inhumanly patient. Waiting for some secret, silent alarm to trigger him off.
I'm only mentioning Halloween, the original John Carpenter from, you know, 78, because I've never watched the remakes from Rob Zombie, because I think what made the original Michael Myers so scary to me and to many people was that you didn't know everything about him. He was a faceless guy behind a mask. I mean, you saw him as a kid, but his motivations later in life were just always, you know, he was behind that mask, and he didn't take it off much, and at least in the first movie. And, so his motivations and his what caused him to snap, you never really understood that. And I didn't like that. In the remakes with Rob Zombie, tried to explain them, you know, with like daddy issues or something. I think once you explain a monster, it doesn't become as scary anymore.
Well, he certainly has an excellent backstory, because it tells us, like, after the killing, he spends how much time in that asylum, and he does nothing. He doesn't speak, he doesn't respond, he doesn't react, he just stares at the freaking wall for how many years? For more than a decade.
Yeah.
And you're just wondering, what the hell makes this guy tick? He's an absolute force of nature.
In many ways, he was the ideal patient. He didn't talk, he didn't cry, he didn't even move.
And I like that his mask, even though it is, you know, the original was based on William Shatner, they say, I don't see it. To me, it's a blank white mask. It just, as generic as it could be, so it could be anyone behind it. By the way, in case the horror community is interested, I did recently have the chance, there is a new copy of Halloween, again, another release on Blu-ray that I've recently picked up, and apparently this is supposed to to be the definitive edition where they actually went back and remastered from the original celluloid copy with John Carpenter's reviewing, and there's a lot of new features on it that would probably, if there's anyone who's a huge fan of Halloween like I am, it's the 35th anniversary version that makes us all feel old,
yeah.
But apparently continually adds some more value to the what the 19th edition of it that they've published throughout the years.
Derek, thank you very much for joining us here on this podcast.
Good talking to all of you guys, and I hope to I'll definitely make sure to listen to the rest of the stories on this podcast and hear what else scares other people. Have a good night.
Bye.
Bye.
The one film that stuck with me more than any, and I'm actually going to have to go out on a limb and probably see it's my favorite horror film of all time, Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah?
Yeah. For me, it's always been a toss between that and Halloween, but Nightmare on Elm Street, there's something about that film. I think it's the idea, like, you know, getting in the dreams, and then the shit you see, like Tina's body bag being dragged through the halls, you know, and all the rest of it.
The death of Johnny Depp was the most blood I had ever seen on screen ever.
Tina's death, Tina's original death,
yeah,
which was cut by the MPAA, was a trillion times worse than that.
Really?
Oh my God! It was the original death.
Tina, who do you think you are? Whoever you are.
I think I was 10, 11 years old when I finally got my hands on a bootleg. You know, like third generation tape that somebody taped and copied. Ooh. And I finally got my hands on it, Nightmare on Elm Street, and it was the whole scene with Tina's death near the beginning. The whole scenario with her waking up to that banging at the window,
yeah.
To them breaking in at the end.
The pebbles being thrown at the window.
Exactly. Yeah. That whole scene from that to when they actually break in through the door and Rod's gone and the room is completely just blasted with blood and Tina's dead on the floor. That whole sequence right there. Yeah. Terrifying.
Tina's death in that film is just it's so wild.
It was all nightmare.
You know what sells me more on that is it's Rod's reaction to everything. Like, because he's seeing what's happening.
Yeah, he's seeing her up on the ceiling, but he can't do anything
about it. He can't do anything about it because he doesn't know what's going on. You know, think about it, he's rustling out of sleep, he has no idea what's going on. And then he sees his girlfriend being twisted around the room like that, and just sees slash marks appearing.
Those slash marks, to be honest, those slash marks really fucked me up, because they were like, one gash of four at a time.
Yeah.
And they were so deep, they didn't bleed right away.
No.
It wasn't until they cut away and then they come back and she puts her hands on them. They just start ebbing. Both I'm like, up. Oh my God.
Yeah.
There was this guy. He had knives for fingers.
Our last guest is a man who has eaten so much fruit from the tree of horror that he puts even me to shame. Some people know him as Nathan Hamilton, others call him Chainsaw Nate, but around here, in the horror community, we know him as the Son of Celluloid.
Son of Celluloid! Son of Celluloid!
Nate, I'm jealous. Who wrote that for you?
That would be my boys, the Casket Creatures. There's a couple of them from them. It's a side project of theirs called Trashy Vamps, and they're amazing. But as you play my theme song, this is the part where I walk to the ring and pose for the crowd, right?
Yeah, you're here with the world-famous Brian Stewart, the nefarious Paul B., and my wife, the lovely Nude. How are you this evening?
I am doing good. How are you guys?
Excellent. It's good, finally, thanks. We get excellent. The Son of Celluloid on this show. I've known for years that you've eaten, slept, and everything horror. And if there's anybody out there that's probably seen more shit from the 70s and 80s than even I have, it's got to be you. It has to be you.
Well, I crammed 4 years of film school into five, and I did 4 years working at video stores, so I've had enough time to watch just about everything ever made, and it's an obsession, what can I say?
Now, are you in Atlanta, Georgia, or a different part of Georgia?
Well, I am. I actually live in Loganville, which is about 35 minutes outside of downtown Atlanta. Okay. So everyone just says Atlanta because no one knows where the hell Loganville is.
You said from your video it shows that you're like a wrestling fan?
Yes, I am.
So Stone Mountain, Georgia, as in Jake the Snake Roberts, Stone Mountain, Georgia?
That would be the same Stone Mountain, Georgia. Jake is kind of a fixture around here. I actually met him in a hotel bar when I was 11 around here.
We actually had him. He was one of the stars at BCW Wrestling back just at the end of last year.
Nice. Jake is awesome.
Yeah.
Great guy, especially if you get to hang out backstage with him. That dude has some stories.
You had suggested you had a story concerning Jaws and it fucking up your vacation. Would you share that story with us, please?
All right, let's set the stage. The year is 1988. Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. In a little condominium at the Myrtle Beach Resort overlooking the water, there's a little kid named Nathan. He's 8 years old. And one of the best things about going here to on vacation, there's HBO in the room. I never got to see that stuff when I was a kid. We didn't go to the video store. I was in a religious family. We didn't watch stuff like that. So I would sneak into the living room at night and go check out movies I wasn't supposed to watch. And one night, the first night of the vacation, they happened to be showing Jaws. So I'm sitting there at 8 years old watching Jaws, hearing the ocean in the background coming through the window, and it absolutely ruined my vacation. I would not go in the water the entire... I wouldn't even go in the swimming pool the entire week. I was nowhere where there was more than like ankle-deep water would I go in, and I had to, you know, play it off like, no, I don't feel like going in the water today. I just built a lot of sandcastles and everything, and I still to this day don't know exactly how much of the movie I saw, but the 4th of July massacre is what really got me. And every time I even thought about going down that beach and setting foot in the surf, and all I heard was that score. And it was over. And no swimming that week for me.
Did you see that?
The 4th of July massacre, isn't that... Is that the one where the kid gets bit and all that gore comes bubbling up from the water, if I remember correctly?
The Kidner boy.
Oh, yeah, and everyone starts rushing back to the surf, and people are screaming, and people are getting eaten, and you just see these barely little glimpse of the shark, and blood starts, you know, filling the water, and, man, it messed with me hardcore. It was actually the first horror movie I had ever seen.
We were talking about Jaws earlier. We suggested that probably the very first...
Chrissy.
The very first part with the girl that goes in, you don't even see the shark. It's just her performance of being picked at and then taken under, just sold and set the tone for the rest of the movie. And then you got the end.
Exactly.
You got the end where poor Shaw's being chomped on. And you're looking at this, and I had always heard that there was problems with the mechanics. The shark never, you know, did what they wanted to do. You're looking, and you know it's a rubber shark. But his performance of being bitten almost in half and taken under by this rubber thing sold that scene. You believed he was being eaten alive by a shark.
Oh, yeah, it all hinges... That movie is all about the performances and the people selling just how big of a menace that big rubber shark is. And I think I've always said the best horror movies are the ones that take something that's normal and make it scary. And Jaws was exactly what that did. It's the same thing Psycho did for Showers, any of that stuff, you know. It's one of the things, even to this day when people get in the water at the beach, they're looking around their feet for sharks.
That's a 20-footer.
25. 3 tons of them.
How can our listeners find the Son of Celluloid?
Go to www.sonofcelluloid.com. That's the blog. Or you can go to Facebook and just search Son of Celluloid. I've got a page there. You can put me up at Son of Celluloid on Twitter, and watch out for me coming on YouTube.
Thank you very much for taking the time to talk with us on this show. We're educating people's fears. We're hoping everything's all good down there in Atlanta. It's minus 20 and fucking stupid up here, I can guarantee you that.
It's 35 and they're talking about we might have snow flurries, so everybody's running to the store for milk and bread here. People in Georgia don't know how to handle cold.
Nate, thank you very much. I wish you a good evening. I'll definitely see you on Facebook. This show will probably be out probably the end of February.
All right, cool. I will definitely tell everybody to watch out for it. And it was fun, man. Feel free to invite me back anytime.
We most certainly will. Thanks a lot again. Take care, sir.
Take it easy, guys. Support independent horror.
Yeah, you can tell he's in the business.
I could listen to him all night.
Oh, boy. I'm glad he's 1,000 miles away.
All the shit flashing back. Another scene. Exorcist 3. The Shears.
Oh, the hallway scene.
The hallway scene.
Oh, yeah. That goes down in history, man.
I'm not a fan of the film. I'm not a fan of any of the sequels.
That's a great
but
film.
But that fucking scene, because it's so quiet, nothing's going on, it's just regular, you know.
The setup is perfect, too.
The thing about that is it's a long hallway shot, and it goes on for like 3 or 4 minutes, and she hears something in her room. And you hear like a clicking, and you're like, what the fuck? So she goes to investigate, and she looks down, and it's a glass of ice water with the ice melting, and the ice are clicking.
Yeah, because they're falling off
exactly.
of each other. Yeah.
So she's like, so she goes for it, and the guy jumps up out of bed. Oh, I can't get any fucking sleep.
Can't I get any sleep? What the hell do you want?
And you thought that was the scare of the scene. Yeah.
So she goes back to her desk, and there's a cop sitting right there. So if you think, well, a cop sitting right there, nothing's going to happen to this poor girl. So she hears another noise. So she goes into the next room, and you don't follow her into it.
Essentially, she's just doing her rounds.
She locks the door, too.
Well, that's the thing. She goes into the room, and as she's in that room, she's investigating that room. Obviously, there's nothing in there, because she doesn't react. She goes in, and as she's in that room, the cop gets tap on the shoulder. Yeah, your shift is over. Let's go. He grabs his hat, makes an exit. She doesn't know she's alone. She comes out of the room, turns around, locks the door, turns around, and she's not even halfway across the fucking hallway.
And that thing just pops out.
The camera zooms right in, the door opens, and some hooded white figure with shears is coming after her, and that fucking noise. Whee! So well done. And, you know, and a lot of people, like, you would suggest, like, oh, it's just a quick pop-up scare. That they used
no,
too
that
much
was an
now.
Established moment. That was not something that was cheap and just out of nowhere.
No,
that was set up.
It was set up, and it was so effective.
Did you get my message? I left it with Keating. Nice girl. Good heart.
I think the Terminator, the original Terminator, James Cameron's, it was sci-fi, but there was some dark tones to that film. Like, that could easily be classified as a horror, almost like Aliens could be horror, but Aliens is more sci-fi as well.
Right.
I mean, it deals with a monster, but so does Terminator.
Yeah, but Aliens is also, I mean, is, in its design, is more grotesque. Terminator, not really. Terminator's a chase film.
Sarah Connor?
Yes.
I remember this specifically when he rolls up to Sarah Connor's house, the first Sarah Connor there, the older lady, and she opens the door. It's got the chain on it, and he's like, "Sarah Connor." She's like, "Yeah," and he just fucking bangs through the door, and she's like, "What the hell's going on?" He puts the red dot on the forehead, bang. We know that's enough to kill someone,
right. But
he's got to put 5 more into her as she's on the ground. That was the first time I'd ever been witness to overkill when I was a kid. But the scene in Terminator that fucked me up when I watched it, the one where my heart was actually racing and I was terrified, was after the truck blows up and all of his endoskeleton is gone and he is now just the machine. And they're going down that long corridor in that factory there. And she's, I mean, Reese is fucked up, and she's got to carry him along. They get through that, they're just going through that door, and there's like a CG, you can tell it's a computerized, it's a stop animation, but you can see it's coming for the door, and it's coming real fast, and they have just enough time to swing that door shut before it gets there. And but as the door is swinging shut, I'm like, shut the fucking door! Look at this fucking thing coming for you, man! Shut the fucking door! It was terrifying!
Well, there you have it. Finally, the 30th Horror 101 episode. I know a lot of people have been waiting for this show. We appreciate your patience. We hope it was worth the wait. We had a great time talking to everyone this evening. It was fun digging up our own horror past and finding out what has scared the hell out of you. We want to thank Eric Hofer, Eugene Trepanier, our good friend Derek Cookson, and the awesome son of celluloid, Nathan Hamilton, for joining us and contributing to this session of Horror 101. Also, thanks to Dave Girard for his story of how Friday the 13th Part 2 altered his life forever. That was a great addition to this night's activities. Not sure exactly what the next show will entail. We've got a few things lined up. I can only guarantee that will be another great time. For the world-famous Brian Stewart, the nefarious Paul B., and the lovely nude, this is Cash Wampum saying there's a horror movie out there that's just for you. And we're going to help you find it right here on Horror 101, Educating Your Fears.